is Lifestyle Indy with Julie Patterson on Freedom 95.
Thank you for tuning in today. We appreciate that you are one of our listeners. Journey Gunderson is our guest for this show today, and it's very exciting because we will be talking about the National Comedy Center. Oh my goodness, who knew there was such a thing? Journey is the executive director of the National Comedy Center. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Goodness gracious. So this opened in August of 2018?
That's correct.
So how long from planning this to the opening did it take? Because this just isn't an overnight kind of thing, right?
Sure, right. I have been involved for 8 years and was tasked pretty specifically with bringing this to fruition, but really the idea started decades ago with Lucille Ball, who is a Jamestown, New York native, and it was she who said to Jamestown, you know, don't just celebrate me or relish in I Love Lucy nostalgia, although that is an important legacy. She said, make Jamestown a destination for celebrating the art form of comedy, because she understood the power of it. And it took us a few decades, but we got around to it, and now that vision is embodied by the National Comedy Center attraction.
That's so cool that she herself was looking to the future, and her legacy mm-hmm. was involved. Where is Jamestown, New York?
Jamestown is in western New York State. Okay. We're about an hour south of Buffalo, but okay. we're also within 3 hours of Pittsburgh, Toronto, Erie, Cleveland, and so wow. we're actually situated quite nicely.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like it. And it makes perfect sense for it to be located there because of Lucille Ball and her legacy. Mm-hmm. So Condé Nast Traveler magazine has recently named the National Comedy Center as one of the best museums in the country already? Really?
Yes. I have to say, I've told people that there were many stresses for 8 years, raising $50 million to build this national caliber attraction and to make sure we did justice to the art form and the artists in comedy. So it was a daunting task, a difficult one, but I was nervous all along. You know, what if we finish it and it's not like an A+, and, you know, this has to be good.
Yeah.
And now I am thrilled to say that no one needs to take my word for it. If you look at our visitor reviews, if you look at reviews from writers like that from Condé Nast Traveler, it has been overwhelmingly well received. People from all age groups and demographics have come out rating it 5 out of 5 on TripAdvisor and saying
Whoa.
This thing is amazing. So people are loving it.
That is so, I mean, it's real close to your heart, obviously, but if you step back and you look at these 5-star reviews, what is it about the National Comedy Center that they're loving? What's inside?
Great question. So a common thread in the feedback is, I didn't know I was going to be laughing for hours, or I don't know when I've ever been to a museum where I literally laughed the whole time.
Oh.
You know, who doesn't like that?
Right.
And while we take comedy seriously in that we are taking the responsibility on of telling the story of the art form and its history in the United States, we made sure that is told via some of the best bodies of work and some of the best materials, so you are laughing along the way. And we made sure that while it's one of the most tech-savvy museums in the world, I mean, it was
Ooh.
Just built in 2018, and so we had to outdo what someone could find on their smartphone in their pocket in 20 seconds by Googling an artist. So the bar was pretty high. We had to make it interactive and fun and engaging, and it is. But then we grounded it with artifacts. So while it's very interactive and technologically advanced, you're also walking by display cases with Charlie Chaplin's cane or
Wow.
Archie Bunker's jacket or Lucille Ball's polka dot dress, or one of the favorites right now is the puffy shirt from Seinfeld.
Oh, that's hilarious. Now, how did you get a hold of these artifacts?
We work very closely with a number of the estates themselves, usually you know, family members if it's a deceased artist, or studios if it's an artifact still owned by a movie studio or a television network. And so it really runs the gamut. But we've got, you know, I think something like 35 or 40 different partners in that, and
wow.
It makes for quite an experience.
So are the artifacts, you're too fresh and young and new for things to rotate probably, but do you have many that, I don't know, some museums will do that, you know, they'll rotate their artifacts and they're not always on display. I'm just curious.
No, that's a great question, and it's true. Even so, there are a portion of the artifacts we own that will always stay here in Jamestown.
Okay.
For example, the entire George Carlin archive, which is 25,000 pieces
what?
Of material he saved over decades of his career. It's just absolutely fascinating and wonderful. And then there are others on loan, but for purposes of preservation, usually things can only stay on display under lights for about
right.
a year.
Yeah, wonderful.
So there's an urgency. If mm-hmm. you're listening to this and wondering, when will I make it this bucket list thing that mm-hmm. comes true? If you want to see the puffy shirt from Seinfeld and the Archie Bunker jacket and a number of other things, Harold Ramis's Egon costume from Ghostbusters, I could go on and on. These yeah. things are on display this year.
Okay, so for 2019.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. So how did you get all of George Carlin's stuff, if you don't mind me asking? Did he leave that to you guys, or you work with the
great
estate?
Great questions.
Or?
Sure. So we worked with Kelly Carlin, his daughter.
Oh, wow.
George Carlin passed away in 2008 and was still very much an active, professionally performing comedian. And he was unusual in that he was kind of a self-archivist of his own career.
Wow.
So he saved everything.
Cool.
And so through, I think some of the designers we actually hired, some of the best museum and cultural designers in the world have been working on this project for 7 or 8 years. One of them said to me, did you hear that, you know, Carlin saved everything and his daughter has it? And so we struck up a relationship and she got to know us and trusted us with it. And so in 2016, before we opened, she announced that she would be donating his archive to the National Comedy Center in Jamestown.
That is so, so super cool. I have to tell you, I've been in radio for a while, and back when he had the George Carlin show, I think it was 94, 95-ish, I got to interview him, and he was the most generous, kindest, wonderful human being on top of just being hilarious. One of the greats.
Yes, he really, really is a great case study for us in terms of having this massive archive of materials he saved right down to his joke files.
Man, wow.
It's like a box of folders,
what?
And inside are Ziploc baggies. And he would put scraps, tiny scraps of paper with little thoughts, little musings into the baggies and organize them by topics like religion, death, stupid people, words, dictionary words. And eventually those would become polished, finished bits. And he was a linguist with such precision, it was like he was performing a play.
He
is
a master.
It's fascinating to see the craft.
Well, and you know, and I'm sure just in everyday life, those thoughts and ideas and notions would come to you at any time of the day. And back then we didn't have our smartphones to take notes. So he would have written it on whatever he had available and put it in a pocket to take home later to put in a baggie to categorize. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's hotel stationery. There are definitely some cocktail napkins in there. Oh, it's hilarious.
That is too funny. Do you have some of that on display, like the little baggies and stuff? Or that's
we
just
do.
Too much?
Oh,
you do?
You can see it there. And then what we've also done is digitize it so that if you really want to, you could spend all day just virtually sifting through the trunks. There were actually these 7 steamer trunks of stuff that made their way to Jamestown. And so we kind of put you in the environment as if you are digging through his archives, and you can just sort through the baggies and the scraps of paper. We've done this with a number of comedians. You can also see handwritten joke notes from people like Rodney Dangerfield. You can see Harold Ramis's abstract as he was just kind of thinking about the concepts of Ghostbusters and what kind of equipment would paranormal investigator scientists have. So it's fascinating.
You know, let's go back to the tech savviness of this place, which again is called the National Comedy Center. It's in Jamestown, New York. We are talking to Journey Gunderson. She's the executive director of the National Comedy Center. The tech savvy. So you mentioned you could, I mean, there's an area where you can literally just go and I imagine, is it like a computer or you put like on some kind of 3D glasses or you
sure.
just sift through? I mean, I guess it could be whatever you want it to be, but I'm curious to know how. I mean,
yeah.
It sounds very state of the art.
Yes, it's hard to imagine. And when these were just concepts on paper, even I had trouble wrapping my head around it. So the first thing every visitor does is complete a sense of humor profile.
What?
And that's, yeah, so that way we can, the exhibits respond to your sense of humor throughout the attraction.
Oh, my goodness so, gracious.
Once you complete this little exercise, tapping things that you find funny across, you know, movies, television, individuals, et cetera, That's loaded onto a wrist chip. You wear it in a bracelet,
what?
An RFID chip, and then you can tap into different exhibits so that it recommends content for you. If you like one artist, it might suggest another for you in the stand-up comedy exhibit, for example.
It's like Amazon.
And the other thing that this allows you to do is sort of the third portion of the museum. It's a massive place, but there's a participatory wing toward the end where you can try your hand at comedy, and you can do comedy karaoke and perform some of the best stand-up bits of all time, or you can do a green screen experience where you get into classic scenes from movies and television and take that home. And so the wrist band allows us to send that to you after the fact, and
wow.
You know, really customizes the whole experience for you. It allows you to make connections between different artists from different generations and also connect you with other visitors. So if there's a father and son or a grandfather and grandson there, and one of them thinks, you know, Mort Saul is the best when it comes to political comedy, but then you have a kid in his 20s who thinks,
like, who's Mort Saul?
Stephen Colbert, like, started
right.
that.
Right.
There will suddenly be a zap between those visitors that sort of connects those stories if they're artists that maybe influenced one another.
Well, I got to tell you, Miss Journey Gunderson, you are, this is, I know you didn't do everything, but who helped you with this? This is quite a project to take on, and then to just hear about it in your words after reading about it. I know it takes a village. How many people, who did you get that was so smart? I'm just curious. This is cool.
Oh, it was definitely a team effort. I mean, here in Jamestown, it started with a small group of very dedicated people who said, you know, this is what Lucille Ball wanted for Jamestown. Let's make it happen.
Uh-huh.
The chairman of the project was a gentleman named Tom Benson, who deserves a lot of credit as well. And then we have a small staff that worked very hard, and we hired, you know, probably, I think it's about 7 different firms
wow.
in all.
Wow.
From Jack Rouse Associates to Cortina Productions to Herzog & Company, led by Stephen J. Morrison, who's kind of a documentarian when it comes to telling the story of comedy. So it was a very interesting creative process to see the teams that are storytellers and mm-hmm. media producers
mm-hmm.
Who know comedy interacting with these firms who are just the tech-savvy interactivity specialists and how this could all soar together. So
wow.
It was a lot of work, but it was a great team.
Boy, it sounds like it. We are talking again with Journey Gunderson. She's the executive director of the National Comedy Center in Jamestown, New York. We're going to come back in just a moment. I want to ask you, where'd that $50 million come from? And also, I want to hear about the year-round calendar of programming. And I know there's a big celebration coming up in the fall. So stand by, and we'll be right back on Freedom 95.
You are listening to Lifestyle Indie. Your life, your style.
They made the cover of Fun World magazine, Condé Nast Traveler magazine, one of the greatest museums out there. Wall Street Journal says, no joke, a museum about comedy, and wrote this terrific article about this place. It's called the National Comedy Center, and it is a museum in Jamestown, New York. With us on the show today, Journey Gunderson, the executive director. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Goodness gracious. So this just opened in 2018 in August. So you guys are, it's a fresh new baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
So tell us, it took $50 million to put this thing together. I know you didn't reach into your back pocket and probably come up with that. Where did you? how did you raise this money?
It was 19 different funding sources, the largest of which was about $9 million. And so if that tells you anything about how much work went into raising it, you know, there was no silver bullet that made this happen. What really helped was that Jamestown has some foundations locally, one of which is the Gebbie Foundation, that really wanted to see Lucille Ball's vision come to life, the Oshai Foundation in Western New York, the Ralph Wilson Foundation, and then New York State's Governor Andrew Cuomo saw this for the great tourism driver that it could be, the great cultural institution that it could be, and thought that it would be a great asset for New York State. And so and then there was some federal funding that came in as well from the help of people like Senator Chuck Schumer. And I should mention that he was also instrumental in getting us a congressional designation. And so now, as of about a month ago, by decree of United States Congress and signed from bill into law, the National Comedy Center is the official National Comedy Center of the United States and cultural institution responsible for preserving the story of comedy in America.
Wow. Wow. I'm just awestruck at how all of this came together. It seems like quickly. I know it wasn't quickly for you, but bam, bam, bam. That's quite an accolade. I mean, a congressional, wow.
Thank you. Yes, we were, it's funny because we always set out to build an attraction and a visitor institution and museum of national caliber and quality. You know, that was the vision and that was our compass throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's wonderful now to have it officially recognized in a bipartisan effort by Congress. And it says something about the institution we built, but it also says something about comedy that's really important. It's about time that people recognized how important this art form is in our culture. And, you know, it hasn't always received the same level of respect as traditional or classical arts. And I think a lot of people mistakenly think that comedians are just kind of funny people winging it and that it's easy because they make it look easy. And so one of the jobs we do in this museum is pull back the curtain on the creative process and the craft and all that goes into it so that people come away with a greater respect for these artists.
Are you a comedian?
No, and I think comedians would appreciate that I stay in my lane. There's nothing worse than coming up to a comedian and like trying out some jokes on them.
Oh.
But I really appreciate comedy and, mm-hmm. you know, through having to test with the designers things like comedy karaoke, which is an exhibit experience in the attraction.
Oh, how fun.
You definitely get an appreciation for how hard it is. And you learn that, you know, it's not enough to have good writing. You could be performing an Ellen DeGeneres bit, but if you don't have the right timing and delivery mm-hmm. down to the syllable, you know, you fall flat on your face. So mm-hmm. It's something that I have a lot of respect for, but have not tried myself.
Yeah, and these artists, I'm sure, I mean, they have failed some before they've mm-hmm. had their great success.
Yes, they all say that they've all bombed, and that's just part of it, you know, and so you have to read the room.
So I have to say, you know, you go back to all the different arts and comparing and contrasting, and I guess I never thought of comedy as its own separate art, but you make a valid point, and what first popped in my head when you said that was, you know, after any great tragedy that we have, whether it be local, global, you know, sometimes it's like you have that thought, oh, it's too soon for jokes about, mm-hmm. and not about the tragedy, but for humor in general after, I guess, the mourning process or whatever the process is. I mean, I'll
sure.
just jump to 9/11, for example, and just Saturday Night Live and the way they handled that. And it, the country needed comedy again. We needed it after going through such a tragedy. And what a huge role that actually played, I think, at the time.
I'm
Would
so
you
glad
agree?
You brought that up because mm-hmm. we actually have a couple of exhibits on that. One is about the healing power of comedy. One is about, it's actually called Too Soon,
mm.
and it examines examples of, you know, when is it too soon to joke about a tragedy? But one example that is of the healing nature, like you mentioned, is, you know, think about being in New York City and having the challenge of creating a sketch comedy show after 9/11.
Oh, man.
And so when SNL decided to go back on the air, it wasn't because anybody, I don't think, was feeling particularly in the mood to be funny as much as
right.
out of a sense of duty to the nation.
Right.
It's like we can only start the healing process via things like this. And so if you remember that moment, it's mayor of New York City at the time, mm-hmm. Rudy Giuliani, mm-hmm. and Lorne Michaels. And Lorne Michaels very, you know, somberly asks him, can we be funny?
Oh.
And Giuliani says, why would you start now? And everybody
yes.
everybody laughs, and you can feel the tension uh-huh. release. And
yeah.
that's what comedy is. It's a release of tension. And our country needs that. And that, you know, is just like the nightly late night shows where whatever happened in the news that day, we're kind of coming together to laugh about it
mm-hmm.
together. And, you know, there are endless stories of the healing power of
mm-hmm.
comedy. There's another exhibit on the role of the USO and how, regardless of how
oh,
comedians
yeah.
have felt about various war efforts politically, so many of them, starting with Bob Hope, go overseas and entertain our troops because it's just so important. Robin Williams was another one who did that
yes.
Many, many times.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you've mentioned, I mean, I've heard a lot of names, a lot of comedians that we've discussed already. I haven't heard a lot of the younger comedians' names. Is there a reason for that? I mean...
No, and actually, it's funny. Someone interviewed me from Great Britain and said, are some comedians afraid to be in your museum because it means they're old or their careers are over?
That's funny.
Which I thought was a good question,
yeah,
but the answer is
sure.
No, because, you know, you're seeing the Ali Wongs in the museum of today. And one of the things we made sure to do is that regardless of your age or your taste, you are seeing artists that you are interested in, and you're seeing current artists, you're hearing the rising voices in comedy as much as you are revering the George Carlins and Jonathan Winters.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's contemporary content, there's content from shows that are still on the air, and it's all sort of mixed in harmony beautifully. So, you know, for example, there's an exhibit called The TV Room, and it's all about the history of comedy on television. And so when you tap in with your bracelet, and there are sofas as if you're in a big living room, the exhibit reads the sense of humor of the people sitting in the space and presents some storylines about the history of comedy on television or the present-day devices that are employed in comedy on television based on the tastes of the people sitting right there. So there are themes like workplace comedy, you know, from Taxi and Dick Van Dyke through The Office,
Thirty Rock.
And so those are the kinds of things that you're learning and, you know, you're laughing the whole time.
And that comes from that sense of humor profile when you first begin your little
journey.
That's right. Oh, that's so cool. Wow. That's just amazing. Okay. I want to spend a few minutes talking about about your calendar and some of the things that are coming up that you're excited about. I know you have a year-round calendar of programming. And are you in charge of that? Who gets to do that? Ooh.
Well, fortunately, I have a great staff. Technically, yes, I'm in charge.
Okay.
Unless anything goes wrong, then I'm not in charge.
I wasn't
don't
here that
me.
Day. Yeah, yeah.
If you don't like it, it wasn't me. No, Malachi
Livermore
is our director of programming, for example. We've got a great team. And so we've always known that it's important for people to experience comedy live. Even though we made a museum about it, we still want people to take in the art form and go and buy tickets to things and celebrate it. On stage. And so the Lucille Ball Comedy Festival is one of the biggest ways we do that.
Ooh.
That is August 7th through the 11th here in Jamestown, Lucille Ball Comedy Festival. And it's a mix of some of the biggest stars in comedy, but also we celebrate and look back at some of the most important legacies in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So there are headlining shows from the hottest stand-ups today, including Sebastian Maniscalco and John Mulaney.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are also panel discussions we call National Comedy Center Dialogues, on looking back on artists like Ernie Kovacs. Last year we did one on the originators of Saturday Night Live, and that featured Lorraine Newman, original cast member, Dan Aykroyd, original cast member and original head writer, Alan Zweibel. And so there's really something for everyone. And then, you know, a portion of the schedule is also this great Lucy nostalgia, where we have Lucy and Ethel impersonator shows and things like that. We have late night comedy that's uncensored. We have free kids comedy. I mean, there's really something for everyone.
So how many years has the Lucille Ball Comedy Festival happened?
We are in our 27th year.
What? How come I never heard of this? Wow, 27th year. Okay.
I don't know, and it's funny you say that because I know you're in Indy, but we do get visitors from, you know, every year it's like 47 states or 44 states, you know, the zip codes of the ticket buyers come from all over the country, and now since we've opened this new national attraction, the National Comedy Center, just in our first 6 months of being open 7 days a week, year-round, we've had zip codes from all 50 states and 9 countries so far. So people find their way to Jamestown. A lot of people fly into Buffalo, and then it's just a little over an hour from there. But it's also near beautiful Chautauqua Lake, which brings up another programming initiative of ours. You asked about our calendar. So the week prior to the Comedy Festival, which is August 7th through 11th, beginning July 29th, we do a week in partnership with Chautauqua Institution, which is a kind of world-renowned cultural mecca. And so in a 4,000-seat open-air amphitheater, which is gorgeous, that's been around since the 1800s, we have dialogues on comedy. So we will be doing an interview with none other than Mr. Frank Oz.
Ooh.
Who directed films like What About Bob and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, over a dozen feature films, but also was really a big collaborator with Jim Henson, you know, voicing and developing characters like Miss Piggy, and having a role in Bert and Ernie, and also voicing Yoda from Star Wars. So he and Maria Bamford will be part of that week. We're also doing a retrospective conversation on the career of Robin Williams, featuring his manager of 43 years, and his good friend Lewis Black.
Neat.
So there's a lot to come and take in here in Jamestown.
Oh, my goodness. So plan your summers, and this is the destination. And do we have a website where people can go and, you know, really do their planning by getting information?
Yes, it's just comedycenter.org, or you can just Google National Comedy Center and find us on social media, find us on our website. And you know, we're open 7 days a week, year-round, and the festivals and the week at Chautauqua are other great times to come.
Okay.
We also do monthly live shows.
Oh, wow, cool. Journey Gunderson, Executive Director of the National Comedy Center, what a delight to have you on the show today. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, man. All right, we'll be headed up to Jamestown, New York very soon.
See you soon.
All right. And you are listening to Lifestyle Indie on Freedom 95.